everybody. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Podcast, episode 645. And I have a good interview for you. And my guest is going to be talking about some really cool stuff. And one of the things that he wants to cover is how to define a mission to base your practice on. Defining a mission to base your practice on. Now, that is something that a lot of people just probably don't think about when they decide to carry a gun. How do you practice for your mission? And what is your mission as a concealed carrier? Let's get right into it. My guest, Dave Somm, has been a regular contributor to this podcast by sending in voicemails and emails. So let's get right to it. By the way, if you like this, please support this show on Patreon. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. I have a lot of customized material, custom podcasts, custom videos for Patreon members. And you can also get email updates whenever I post new content, new episodes, new videos. You can get an email update. Go to handgunworld.com, handgunworld.com. Sign up for email updates. You also get a free copy of the article that I wrote recently called Because I Can't Carry a Cop. You'll get that free article by signing up for email updates, and that's at handgunworld.com. Here we go with the interview. And Dave Somm, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, I consider myself pretty practical.
You are. You're like me, kind of just an everyday guy, but we love the Second Amendment. We love firearms. We believe in freedom, defending ourselves, and the right of self-defense for everybody, don't we?
Absolutely.
So thanks for coming back on. I want to, for people who are just now tuning in, Dave's probably the largest contributor of content other than me to this show. You've sent me so many voicemails and emails and things. So if you've been listening to me for a while, you've probably heard me talk about some of Dave's comments, and you've heard him on voicemails. And what's really cool is we had a chance to meet less than a week ago. Dave and I went to Kerrville, Texas, right at the epicenter of the total solar eclipse. Pretty cool, wasn't it?
It was. And looking at the maps of the prediction, I think it was like dead center, right in the middle of the path of totality. So we got, we got to see there were clouds, but we still got a maximum of darkness there. It's really cool.
Yeah, we got like over 4 minutes of darkness it started at 1:35 in the afternoon. That was pretty good.
And it was dark.
It was dark. Yeah. We were at a big park. There's a Stonehenge replica in Kerrville, and we were there at that spot. And you remember the street lights came on and some of the house lights came on.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty wild. Like it was legitimately dark. I think the clouds probably helped, but yeah, it's like it. So I was there with my family, and right as it's getting, total pitch black, one of my kids is, she's young, so of course she's just like, wow, this is great. And so she's running around and trips and falls and gets some thorns in her hand. And so the whole time when it's like the eclipse and we're only getting glimpses of it through the clouds, she's like, my hand, owie. So, but that's how dark it was, yeah.
She's going to have a bad memory of the eclipse, won't she?
Well, she's young. There'll be another one in 20 years or so.
She'll be around to see that one, yes.
Yeah.
Well, that was really a cool experience, and I was glad we were able to get together. And I normally don't get a chance to meet very many of my listeners or my viewers, and so it was really cool. And thanks again for setting that up and meeting me there.
Yeah, it was way fun. It's good to visit for a little bit.
My wife loved it too. So, speaking of the eclipse, you and I both showed up, and of course we were carrying. As we should have been carrying. And one of the memories I have is when you and I were walking into that park, we passed by a 30.07 sign here in the state of Texas, which prohibits open carry. And I thought that was kind of interesting. We were concealing, so it didn't apply to us.
Yeah, that's one thing. When you're traveling in different states, they have different laws. And so I remember that Texas does have laws that, and they're like, they're enforceable as long as it's posted a certain way. And so, yeah, when I was walking into that park, I was trying to be as subtle as possible and not have a panic look on my face. But I was just like walking in and looking around and skimming through open carry of firearms. All right, we're good.
Yes, yes. They didn't have a 30.06 sign, which bans guns, and they didn't have a 30.05, which is banning permitless carry, which, you know, I think they're going way too far with the signs in this state. But here in Texas, our signs do carry the force of law. As long as they are properly posted, they got to have the statute number. They have to have the statute itself, certain font level, font size, and all that.
Yeah. So,
but they did.
It's good to review those. Like if you're going to travel or whatever, it's good to look up some of those different rules for different states. And handgunlaw.us is pretty much the best resource for that.
Yeah.
But I've known from when I did truck driving that in New Mexico, they do not honor the Utah concealed carry permit. So you don't get a concealed carry if you're from Utah going into New Mexico. And so we spent some time in New Mexico and, you know,
you
I saw
carry,
some
huh?
sign. Yeah, I had pepper spray, which is not a firearm, so.
No, it's not. Yeah, people need to know you drove all the way from Utah down to Kerrville, so you went through New Mexico. You couldn't carry.
Yeah.
You went through Colorado. Was your permit valid there?
It is. It is so far. They keep. I mean, you have to keep up on the changes because you know Colorado. Stuff changes there, and I believe they do have a magazine capacity law that is 15 rounds, which is it's stupid. But
it used to be 10, wasn't it?
I think I remember Michael Bain. It was a few years ago that he was talking about it, and they would be arguing for 10, and then at some point, one of the lawmakers was like, "Okay, just how many do you need? What do you need?" And he's like. He's like, I need as many as I want. And they're like, all right, well, so like a Glock 19 is like 15 rounds. So we'll just 15.
Yeah.
And he's just like, this is stupid. But and I think it was one of those situations where a lot of the sheriffs were like, we're not going to enforce this, but it's in law.
Yeah.
So, but fortunately, my gun is a 15 round. So no concerns there, even if there was a small concern at all.
So tell everybody listening and watching what you were carrying to the eclipse.
All right, so we'll do the full gear thing here. I'll get my holster out because the holster is part of the system.
Yes, it is.
So take this out, magazine out. Gun is empty. Very important to make that as part of your habit. It's one of the dangers of guns is when we get so familiar with guns, we sometimes lose that little bit of respect. But this is a Smith & Wesson M&P. This is 2.0. This is the compact. So it's a 15-round magazine.
Yeah. Nice
gun. Got a 4-inch barrel, about Glock 19 sized. I have, let's see if we can see, Trijicon
HD looks like.
Trijicon HD XR, so the skinnier front sight post. So I like it. I think the trigger's fine. I think some people are tricky, but like, it's got a good, I would say, single action feeling with a, you know, you take slack out and then single action.
Yep.
So got that.
It's a good trigger.
This holster is from Privateer Leather. Now this is This is a guy in Tooele in Utah, and it's a nice leather holster. I've added a little bit of moleskin as a pad. I found that there was sometimes when with the original holster, it could have been my imagination, but it felt like the gun was like tilting out a little bit, and so I added, just thickened it up in here to kind of keep it up straight.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's a nice holster. I want to say this is the Vigilante, but I'm not sure. But if you go to his website, you can see them. The stitching is well done. It's very rigid. He does have a plastic stiffener in here to hold it open.
To hold the mouth of the holster open. Good.
Right. He doesn't recommend, like, if, let's say, you go somewhere and you have to leave your gun in the car all day, he would say, just take the holster off, too. Don't wear it empty. But for when you're working at the range, you can draw, and it will keep the mouth open. So you don't have to worry about, you know, the leather flapping in and accidentally pulling the trigger when you go to reholster. But, yeah, so it has the leather snaps. It's not tuckable, but if you're not doing a tucked-in shirt, this works good for that. And it is, as you can see, it's got kind of rounded surfaces.
Nice,
it's
see
got
that.
Some of these things. But it's very comfortable to wear. There's something about leather, even leather that's fairly rigid like this. It's really comfortable.
It's more comfortable than Kydex. I've found that when carrying inside the waistband. What do you find that also?
Yeah, I'm gonna try a full Kydex holster. I've got one ordered from Riley Bowman at KSG Armory.
Yeah.
So that one, there's some lead time on it, so that's on its way. For belt, so this is the EDC Belt Company, the foundation belt. So we have this buckle here. It's very, very slim. And let me get my
hole. I see that. That is a small buckle.
So here's my old, almost completely worn out Wilderness belt.
That's what I'm wearing. I'm wearing one of those.
Yeah. And so you can see the difference.
Wow,
in
look at that.
Bulk for the buckles.
Yeah.
So this just threads through, and it's got Velcro. The Velcro part here, it has a bit of a stiffener, so it's fairly stiff. And then there is a stiffener on the buckle end back to about here. So I'll wear it so that the Velcro is on my left side.
Right.
It's basically like this. So I get the stiffener for strong side carry all the way back. But if you can look... that, like, you can see here's the stiffener, and then here is without the stiffener. It's still pretty good,
yeah,
but I think it's designed for appendix and strong side. So if you wanted to do appendix, then you would have that support to put it up here. You could bring it all the way back here for strong side. If you're left-handed, you just flip it over and run it the other way.
So he's built it for both strong side and appendix carry, right?
Yeah, because the stiffener goes about to here, and it can go pretty far around your waistband.
Okay, so let's back up, Dave. So earlier it was privateer leather, right?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to put show notes below this video and in the podcast posting. And privateer leather, I'll look that up. And then also, I'm going to make a note of that. And then, of course, KSG Armory, Riley Bowman.
Yeah, so I'm going to try one of those. It is a Kydex. Well, it's a plastic, a polymer holster. However, it does, he ships it with a pillow or a wedge in there. So I think most of the holster that's going to be touching you is actually going to be that pad. And that those are designed more for appendix, but you can get it canted with a tuckable clip so it could go on one side.
I do
carry a spare magazine.
Okay, good.
But the way I carried it, I had gotten to the point where doing, like, I love the mag holder product, mm-hmm. and I think that's one of the best ones. But I got to the point, and it's probably my stomach, unfortunately, you know, just it happens. It was just not comfortable sitting up there on the front right next to my belt buckle. And so I looked for a new way to do this. And in the past, I had tried doing the DeSantis mag packer in a back pocket.
Yeah.
But I noticed that sometimes the magazine would kind of slip out and just be floating in my pocket. So this is a Neomag. So
Neomag. Let me write that down too.
Yeah. So this is for, you want to put it in your pocket. It's not the fastest thing in the world, but it does keep the magazine more or less in the same position.
Yeah, because there's a clip on it there.
Yeah, it's a clip so that it's basically disguising it like a pocket knife.
Look at that. Okay.
So it doesn't look like that. And this one, you can get one that's longer or shorter. I got one that was a little longer so that it sits down in your pocket and hides the magazine.
Nice.
Looking back, I don't know if that's 100% necessary, but you can try it. The metal on this is pretty rough cut, unfinished metal. So I just put duct tape on it so it wasn't just scratching up my magazines. But it's basically a magnet. So
yeah, look at that. I see that. And so that's got to be easy to draw from that magazine out, right?
So it is. It's pretty easy. It's in your pocket, so you can get in there. What I've found is some people are able to grab it and draw straight out, but I found that with this magazine or this setup, it tends to just pull the whole thing out with it.
Okay.
So what I have to do is I have to actually. So I'll reach in with my fingers like this,
right?
And inside my pocket, I roll it off, and then I can take it out.
That's a good technique.
It's not the fastest thing, but you have an extra magazine, and you can. So you end up with the magazine like this, and you can just kind of get it in there and reload. It's faster than not having one. It's faster than digging around in a pocket. Something where it's mounted on your belt obviously would be ideal for speed, but maybe it can't conceal as well. So this is really good for concealment.
That's really good. That's a good setup. I like that, Dave. That's good.
So yeah, I have that. And then in the back pocket, we have a flashlight. This is...
Hey, that's the same. I think that's the same light that I have.
Maybe.
Okay. I got the Streamlight. It's the Streamlight ProTac 2 LX. Is that what it is?
That's close. This is I think this is Surefire's kind of version.
Oh, you got a Surefire. Okay. That's a better flashlight than mine.
Well, I mean, it's pretty good. So it can do, with new batteries, it can do 1200 lumens.
Nice.
It has kind of a wider spread. So if you go to training classes now, kind of the new hot thing for flashlights are the mod lights one, where they're like, we want high candela. Basically, it's a super focus. It's like a laser beam. And the advantage of one of those is, like, you know, if you're a cop, for example, and you see someone across the parking lot, you can hit them with that focus spotlight,
that light, yeah,
and it illuminates their hands, so you can see what they're doing. You can gather information. So this, you can do that. It's just maybe not as far as one of those, and it's fine for me in a role where, you know, most of the time I'm just using the lower lumen thing to look,
yeah,
and find your keys or whatever. And then, but I like the switch that it has. You push a little bit and you get a little bit of light, and you push harder and you get more light.
That's such a better light than mine. I mean, I like this Streamlight. This thing was $50 bucks, I think, or $48.95, something like that. And I didn't have the budget at the time for a nice Surefire like yours, but that's good.
Yeah.
That's cool. Good setup.
And then the advantage of having a light that can do 1200 lumens is that even when the battery is dying, when you're like running out of battery, it's still like 400 lumens. So it's still plenty of light.
I think mine maxes out at 400, something like that. And I also have the rechargeable version of this one too. But you know,
need to get some rechargeable batteries because this thing. So I put some tape on here. So Streamlight or Surefires, they have a feature where you can tighten, twist the cap to have it stay on constantly. And I found with this in my back pocket, as I would get up and out in and out of seats, the seat would like rub against it and just turn it on. And it would use up my batteries. So I was just complaining about it one day, and my daughter's like, well, why don't you just put some tape on there so it stops twisting? And I was like, oh, yeah.
Why didn't I think of that, right?
Yeah.
Well, good. Thanks for sharing your setup, Dave. I appreciate that. So while we were there, let me take my turn. So while we were there, I was carrying this little SIG P365 while we were there at the park and watching the eclipse. So and this is a standard, completely stock P365, even with the SIG sights on it and everything. Forgot what they call them, SIG X-ray sights or X-ray, something like that. I got to say, I did not like this gun when I first bought it, and I regretted buying it until I carried it about 3 or 4 months. And it just really started to appeal to me. One of the things I didn't like at first is this is a very small grip. So you see how my fingers go completely around that grip, which means when I bring my support hand in, there's really no place on the gun for it to go. I got used to that, and I can shoot this well, and I was carrying it with actually just a 10-round magazine when you and I were together. I did I had a spare magazine in a mag holder carrier, which I don't have the mag holder here with me right now. But that was my setup, and I was carrying outside the waistband. In a Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waist. And I'll tell you, for about the past 3 years, I carry outside the waistband, and it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's my P365, whether it's the Glock 43X, my Shadow Systems MR920. I always carry everything here outside the waistband, and this is one of the best OWB for concealment holsters that are out there. Now, I may go back to inside the waistband, and I might try that privateer leather. I might try Riley's belt. I kind of like that. And if those work out well, I'm going to go probably back to IWB, but it'll be appendix. I'll carry this appendix inside the waistband.
Yeah, I think for inside the waistband, having the, you know, a Wilderness or the EDC, the foundation belts, I think those are, because they flex around the holster, it allows it to kind of stick to you without having to have a lot of extra pressure put on. So I think that's the way to go for inside the waistband. But,
and you know, Dave, sometimes I get questions people ask me when I talk about it. Why do you carry just the 10-round magazine in your P365? Because there's 12-round, 15-round, and 17-round. That day when you and I were together, I knew there was going to be 1,000 people there. And I wanted maximum concealment. You know, I didn't want to get made carrying. So I carried this little 10-round magazine. And then I have had my Streamlight flashlight. And the other thing that I like to do, you probably didn't know this, but at the same time, I was carrying my little Ruger LCP2 in my pocket. I had it in my back pocket in a DeSantis Nemesis Superfly.
Nice.
So that was in my back pocket while the SIG was on my my waistband. And I don't carry, since this is a backup gun, I don't carry an extra magazine with it. But that was my setup. And this thing, this little Ruger LCP2, I think I said LCP Max, I'm sorry. It's the LCP2, the version that came out before the Max. So this is a 7-round mag, one in the chamber. So my backup is 8 rounds of 380. And if I'm going to my backup 380, That's not a good day, but I think it might still make the bad guy change his mind.
Oh yeah, I've seen videos where people get shot with 380, and it's good enough.
Yeah, and my favorite 380 gun, but it doesn't fit in my pocket too well, is my Glock 42.
Oh yeah.
But anyway, so that's what I was carrying, and thank you for sharing yours. I have a Wilderness tactical belt. Mine's almost worn out, like yours.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm going to do at this point, I was going to shut the video off, but I think I'll let it keep going. That's fine.
Okay.
People will watch a long video, but hopefully they will get something from it. So you sent me a text, which is really, really cool. We talked about our gear choices. You sent me a text talking about different laws in different states. We touched on that a little bit. But let's talk about the last point you made, which I like. Defining a mission to base your practice on. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so there are lots of different levels, basically, that you could get in to carrying a gun.
Mm-hmm.
You can get, as a civilian, if you wanted to, you could like learn how to jump out of airplanes. You could go and do breaching schools and do stuff with carbines and stuff. But as I've been in some of these more advanced training classes, one of the things that they talk about is like you have a limited amount of time. You have a limited budget. What are you going to practice and get good at? And you need to define what it is that your goal is as a concealed carrier.
Yeah.
So if your goal is to just not be mugged, then okay, then you probably can get away with a J-frame revolver, like the SIG 365. I think most people who are carrying a gun, they're just like, hey, I just don't want to, if something happens, I want to be able to save myself.
Right.
And consequently, when the Shield came out, it was the best-selling gun in America. And then when the SIG came out, it was the best-selling gun in America.
I remember, it still is.
Yeah. And I remember at the start of the, when they were starting to close things down for the pandemic, for COVID,
mm-hmm.
I popped into Gallinson's gun shop in Salt Lake City, and I could see guys who looked like they were dressed up in a costume to play like really gay dudes, like the type of person who were like, oh, that guy's dressed up like a gay guy, and nothing against it, I don't care.
Yeah,
but
neither do I.
Were they at the store? They were getting themselves a 365 because it's small, it's light, it fits in there. So if your mission is just not get mugged, I don't want any trouble, just trying to get myself home at night, then your training should be based on, I would think you want to be more focus on a surreptitious draw. Like you should still be able to draw quickly and efficiently and get a shot on target, but you're gonna want to be working more on those kind of the personal interaction skills. Maybe you should take a managing unknown contacts class.
Perfect.
That'll teach you the skills, and then you practice doing role playing with people where, you practice making the decision as the bad guy to, ignore the other person's protestations and start to move in for an attack.
Well, you're managing your environment a little bit better.
Well, yeah. So you're practicing like, someone comes up and they ask you this. And if you as the defender are like, hey, man, I'm sorry, I don't have anything for you. And then that person will exhibit certain physical cues that indicate that they've made a decision to either leave you alone or that they're going to try and push harder. And so you get to, in a role play session, you get to see those things on a live person right in front of you. And then the culmination of that is that you use a pepper spray.
Yeah.
And so a gun obviously is useful if you are in a situation where you're about to be permanently crippled or killed. But for every other situation, a lower level of force might be just what you need.
Very
true. So classes like that, or if you've looked at Craig Douglas's Instagram page, sometimes he'll talk about how you can use a little bit of distraction and deception, and maybe you're going for a pocket gun rather than that, like rip the shirt up, get in there, do that draw. That might be, that action might be giving playing your hand too much. So mm-hmm. If your mission is just avoid trouble, I just like there's a, like you see the picture, during riots in Atlanta, there was a dude pumping gas and he had a gun out and it was just down by his side. Like, you can base your training.
Yeah,
on that.
I wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't do that. I think that guy probably needs some training.
Yeah, definitely does.
But let's say that your mission, let's say you've seen the mass shootings and you say to yourself, I couldn't live with myself if I just ran away from that and left those people behind. Well, then your training is going to be involving concealment, but maybe you want a bigger gun with a bigger sight picture, more capacity, or one that has, I think it's more important probably to have one that fits your hand better.
Oh, definitely true.
So that you can have a stable platform for those longer range shots.
That's definitely true, and like I mentioned earlier in the video, this SIG is, it's actually not my primary carry anymore because it's just too small.
Right.
It was last Monday when we went to watch the eclipse, but I mentioned why I was carrying that. Normally I like to carry a Shadow Systems MR920, which is really the exact same size as a Glock 19. And it's really a fancy Glock 19 is what it is.
Yeah.
And that's, I can get my hand on that. I can not only this hand, but it fits my hand very good. And your M&P fits a lot of people's hands as well.
Yeah, and of course with the M&P you can switch out the palm.
Which one
swell.
Is that you got there? Medium?
I think this is the medium one. Yeah, because it kind of bows out a little bit, but it's pretty small. And so I want it small enough so that I can get my finger right there on the trigger, and we have a little bit of space in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and pull it that way.
That M&P 2.0 compact is a really, really nice gun. I can tell that Smith & Wesson, when they came out with that, they were going right at the Glock 19.
Yeah, it's like a customized Glock 19. It's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, but having that interface with your hand,
yeah,
then that way when you need, because like you can make 25 yard shots and you can hit, 5-inch circle at 25 yards. It's possible to do. Takes a little bit of concentration. Maybe you need to practice more. But one of the things you can do, like, if you have a good grip that fits your hand properly, it's not too big, it's not too small, and then you have a good trigger that just doesn't require too much effort to fire it, then that is going to make it easier to hit targets at that longer distance. So that's why I'm saying, if your mission is to be, Elijah Dickin, or you want to be Jack Wilson, that guy has skills because
yes,
he saw the situation. It was a approximately 15 yard shot. The guy was moving left to right. He drew his gun and he deliberately aimed to the head, to a target. It's about this big, hitting a target about this big,
mm-hmm.
moving. And in one shot, he nailed it.
What was the firearm he was using?
It was a SIG 229 in 357 SIG. And so that one, the initial pull is a double action trigger.
Yeah, that's some skill right there.
So what that tells me is that he makes shots like that at the range a lot.
Yeah.
Like, that is something that he is comfortable doing. he likes to reach out to those long ranges. So it's, you know, if that's your mission, then you can
run your practice around that mission.
Right. And then, so if you want that bigger gun, or maybe on yours, you wanted to set your SIG up for long range. Maybe you want to get a trigger that is a little bit lighter. And maybe you look at the Wilson Combat Grip frames, which are a little bit bulkier.
Which I have. And let me say something about this. First of all, this P365 is incredibly accurate, even at long range. I don't have a problem, as long as I do my part, hitting steel at 25 yards with this. No problem.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about a 4-foot piece of steel. I'm talking about a silhouette piece of steel. Even smaller than a human body. And at 25 yards, no problem. Now, this is the standard grip module. Mm-hmm. I did play around with the Wilson Combat module. I did a video about it. I did a podcast about it. I think I'm going to go back to it. I wanted to see the difference in shooting between the Wilson module and the SIG module. The Wilson Combat module changes the gun. It changes it for the better. And for anybody that owns a 365 XL, the Wilson Combat modules are really sweet on that gun as well.
Yeah. Or what you could do, you could get the XL grip module and put it on that small gun and get a 365X.
I have done that. And boy, is that nice. And this trigger is pretty good on this 365. I mean, there's really not a lot of take up right there. That's the take up.
Yeah.
It's really short take up. Let's go this way. It's a really short take up, and then it just breaks cleanly.
Nice.
Yeah. So these things, and of course, a lot of people change this out and they put in the flat trigger.
Mm-hmm.
But I like your statement. I like your statement. And I'm glad you texted this. Defining a mission to base your practice on. So what's your practice? What's your mission?
So I've had, through my different travels, I've had active shooter training. I've done it with simunition rounds where we were running around in the school. They set up scenarios. And based on that, like, you need to have your skill good enough. I would say that you don't have to think about it too hard.
Mm-hmm.
So like drawing a gun, aiming, you know, all you're doing is just being precise in case there's a hostage shot. But the hardest part about the active shooter incident is finding the guy.
Yeah.
So if they're shooting and it's across the school, you got to get there. And if you hear shooting, people are being shot. So you need to get there right now. So I think as part of the mission, if you're going to be dealing with the active shooter, you need to make sure that you have a little bit of cardio.
Yeah, then, no kidding. You got to be in reasonable shape, don't you?
Yeah. So you're going to be running a long distance potentially, but you need to be able to have steady hands for that shot. And of course, I'm always trying to work on cardio. I'm not the picture of fitness right now. But so
nor am I.
Yeah. But so it's anything you can do to improve that is good. And then being able to take those longer range shots. I've taken classes from some instructors who are pretty set on what's called the B8 repair center target.
Yeah.
It's basically, it's like the center of an NRA bullseye target. And it's the black circle is about a 5-inch circle. You can also take a CD compact disc and trace it around, and that's a 5-inch circle, or it's about the size of a grapefruit. But that's a good targeting area because it's about a 5-inch circle right here, or like a 5-inch circle right here. And that's like, if you can consistently, in every drill you do, you know, your standard is that all of your shots are in that 5-inch circle, then that's a pretty good way to be. Yeah. One of the hardest tests of long range shooting, I think, is it's a drill called the no fail shot. by Chuck Pressburg. And what it is, you set up a target at 25 yards, the B8 repair center. And when the timer goes off, you have 3.5 seconds to draw your gun from the holster and get a single shot. And it has to be in the black. And then you repeat that process 10 times. So you reholster and then beep, draw again, bang. Okay, then repeat, draw again, bang. You do that 10 times.
5-inch circle at how many yards?
25.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
That's a challenge.
Yeah, that's a challenge.
That's a challenge.
That, you know, Jack Wilson has shown if you can do that at 25.
It can be done on the first shot. And think about it. He shot that cold. He didn't have any practice.
At the time. John Correa has the video. You can watch it if you can stand to watch it. It's pretty awful. But he had been watching this guy, and you know, there's a little bit of a startle factor when someone pulls out a gun and starts shooting inside of a church, and so I can kind of forgive him for that. But once he finally gets the gun out, it's pretty quick, and he pretty much just aim, bang, and
amazing, amazing. And you know, that's unfortunately, that's the world we live in, isn't it, Dave?
It is. I mean, there's all one of the first thing that happened after Adam and Eve left the garden was, of course, Cain and Abel. There's always been violence, unfortunately. There's humans, there's going to be violence. But
I'm going to say something controversial too. And I don't care if people don't like it. But in the Garden of Gethsemane, when the Romans were coming to arrest Jesus, Peter had a sword.
He did.
Peter was there armed. Okay? Now, you have to wonder, why was he armed? Well, I think we all know why he was armed. Because he was expecting something to go down. And you know, that's kind of how we are, is now these days... we have to always be vigilant because something might go down.
Yeah, it could. I mean, where we were in Kerrville, it's not that far from Uvalde.
And about a 2-hour drive.
Yeah, well, I guess if you look at a map of Texas, it's only this far away. But yeah,
2 hours, but, 2.5 hours probably.
But yeah, it's in that part of the country. And I mean, Texas Hill Country is beautiful, and it's very picturesque, but yet there is still, you know, a kid who is having problems, is getting that negative feedback loop in his mind and getting on the wrong forums and looking for people who have decided that the thing to do is to lash out at the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So I like that. I like that point, Dave. And I think that's probably going to be the title of this episode, is defining a mission to base your practice on, because I think a lot of people who carry a gun may not think about that.
Yeah, you definitely, because you want to be able to focus your time. And then as far as my plan is, maybe let's say I'm by myself in a public place, there's an active shooting, I'm gonna just assume that maybe other people are armed, but nobody else has gotten the training that I have, and I'm gonna move and try and see what I'm gonna do, or what I could do, how I could help. It's always a roll of the dice. It's dangerous, but if someone comes into your grocery store and they're shooting, it's dangerous anyway.
It's a bad situation already when that happens.
If I'm out with the family though, I'm going to be taking them away.
That's what you should do. Yeah. Taking them away. And if you still happen to be on the scene after you get your family out of there, you better know what to do. You have to use your firearm.
For sure. Cause like a lot of these incidents, they get resolved really quickly, but some of them kind of drag on for a while.
Oh, some of those school shootings have gone on for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, so, unfortunately, yeah. It's so sad in the school shootings when there's nobody there to diffuse the situation and take care of the bad guy. And yeah. and the bad guy is in there for what? 1 to 2 minutes shooting away? That's horrible.
Well, and even if you think about what happened in Uvalde, Texas, what happened with those cops? They had not defined their mission.
No,
The mission should be, if children are in danger, then you have to stop the shooting.
You have to, yes. And the cops did not define their mission, no. And it seems to me like they, in Uvalde, they didn't even have the training for the mission, even if they knew what the mission was.
I mean, it seemed like it.
Yeah.
I think intellectually they knew that they needed to, because again, you can see the video. The people who released it, the government has, they've blurred out and cut audio on some of the more horrific parts of it. Honestly, I didn't watch the whole thing. I watched the first few minutes of it. You can see them assembling and they start moving down the hall. And then the guy shoots at them through the window and they duck down, which, okay, I understand. If someone's shooting at you, it's hard to fight that startle response.
That's the response, is to duck.
But like, there's windows to that classroom. They couldn't have sent somebody around to bash in the window, distract the guy, see where he was. Or just, you know, charge in there and he can't get all of us. Like, that again, they hadn't defined their mission. They defaulted to officer safety instead of children's safety.
Well, you're exactly right. Yeah, instead of let's respond to the mission.
So another thing that is part of if you're expecting to be in an active shooter scenario, people are going to be shot. This is a soft T wide tourniquet. So almost any, let's say, so if you get shot in a limb and it hits an artery, let's say the worst case scenario is the femoral artery that runs down the inside of your leg. That thing, if that is hit, you maybe have 2 minutes to stop it before you've lost enough blood to where you can't survive. But you may have 15 to 20 seconds before you pass out. So something like this, where it's a purpose designed tourniquet, and I've got it staged so that I can grab it and just pull it open. There's a rubber band holding it shut. Thread your leg through this, pull it tight as hard as you can, and then crank the windlass. So a tourniquet in that situation, this is the fastest way to stop massive bleeding from a limb. If you have massive bleeding, like if you get shot in the chest, well, what you need is a surgeon. So in that case, you still need to stop the shooting, get the medical people in there and get people to the hospital. But for limb, for the arms, for the legs, a tourniquet like this, get it up on there as high as you can, rip it, pull it as tight as you can, and then maybe two or three more cranks with the windlass. And that will, it'll give you bruising. I've done it in a class where I get a big nasty bruise here. Because it's crushing your arm, right?
Yeah.
And it hurts like the dickens, but I mean, it'll stop you from bleeding out. But you need to, you know, at least when you do your CPR class, you can take a stop the bleed class, and they go over some of the basic principles of stopping bleeding. They'll talk about how you can, you know, if you take gauze, you can, and let's say it's you get shot here, and it's, you can't really tourniquet this, and if you tourniquet this, like it would be too high. So you can basically with packing the wound, you're adding pressure, you know, adding pressure to the wound, but from the inside of the wound, you're just filling it with gauze and stopping all the blood vessels.
And
that way.
That's good training too, Dave. I'm glad you've had training and knowledge on that, is some first aid medical assistance in a situation like that. There's going to be hurt, bleeding people. And we need to know what to do in that situation.
So having all that knowledge, it gives you options to choose from. I remember, do you remember there was a shooting at the Trolley Square Mall in Salt Lake City?
I've heard about that, yeah.
That happened 2 months after. after I got married. It was 2 months after I got married, and it was about a mile down the street from where I lived at the time.
Ooh, okay.
And I remember thinking, like, what would I do? I hadn't started caring or anything back then. And that's part of what drove me to start caring, is to be like, I feel like it could handle most situations, but like that, like, gee, what would I do?
Yeah. So, well, and you don't want to be in the situation where you say to yourself, well, what do I do now? That's bad.
Yeah. You want to be able to have those options to be able to make a good decision about what course of action you need to take. Good. So if you're going to do, you know, the extreme situation where you're worried about, like, you know, I want to be able to be helpful, functional in an active shooter situation, then I think you need to, if you can get one, like a good simunition instructor to teach an active shooter class, at least, you know, maybe you can find Ed Monk, who teaches active shooter.
Heard of Ed class. Monk. Yeah. So does Gabe Suarez.
Gabe Suarez
teaches great. I think he calls it terrorist interdiction.
Terrorist interdiction. Yeah.
That's shooter interdiction. Active shooter interdiction, I think, is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's Ed a mouthful does, there.
Yeah. So Ed Monk does, he'll do like lectures, and he'll, so it's not a lot of like running around doing the simunitions, but he talks about, he's like, his class is trying to convince like business, you know, people and school administrators to have an actual active shooter program in place, rather than just like lock the doors and wait for the police to come. So I think do that. You should probably work on cardio, look at stop the bleed.
Definitely.
And if you're going to do it, get a gun that's set up for longer ranges and start practicing at those longer ranges. So
even again, and I want to stop here in about a minute or two. You just mentioned get a gun set up for longer ranges. You also need to be set up for longer ranges. And what I'm talking about is concealed carriers. This P365 can make good hits at a long range. But here's the big question. What about me? Can I do it? Am I set up for long range shooting? I think that's just as important as if the gun is set up for a long. I tell you, I have seen skilled shooters use a J-frame revolver and make amazing shots.
Yeah, and if you can, so the new Smith & Wesson, the Lipsy's revolvers.
Oh, I want one of those.
I do too. But those could be good at long range, because one of the things they have is they have that kind of oversized grip.
Yeah.
So it actually it'll fill your hand really well. And then they've changed the trigger, and they put in good sights. So the trigger is really smooth, and then you know, you'll be able to hold the sights on.
I want one of those things.
If a J-frame is all that you're realistically going to carry, but you're worried about the active shooter thing, then
you're still fine. You just got to practice.
Yeah, you got to practice. Go take it out and reach out. I think one of the drills for that's good for longer ranges is you've heard of the super test. You'd said
I have heard of it. Yeah.
10 shots at 15 yards in 15 seconds, 10 shots at 10 yards in 10 seconds, 10 shots at 5 yards in 5 seconds.
Ooh, that's challenging.
Yeah. When you get up close, it's like, it's pretty quick. And it's all in one of those B8 repair centers. Yeah. You can set up, you can get a silhouette target with, put a couple of those bullseyes on there, set it up that way. And then honestly, like, one thing I like to do, I worked a job where I would go out to the desert, and in the middle of the night, I could just go out away from everybody. I would take Monster energy drink cans, chuck them out on the range, see if I could hit them with the pistol.
That's a good target.
And then every time you hit it, it goes further away.
Right.
And then you do that with a few cans, and suddenly you've got a line of cans that it's about the limit of where you can hit. So you can try and push that out further.
And that's a cheap way to come up with targets. Very good.
Well, and it's fun. Yeah. And you get a reward when you hit the target. And if you miss, like, you definitely missed.
Yeah. You know if you missed or not, don't you?
Yeah.
You'll figure it out. Dave, thanks. This is great. I want to continue this. This is a great discussion. So I'll be reaching out to you for part two, okay?
Definitely. We can speak some more about this.
Thanks for coming on. Dave Somm, everybody, and he's got great ideas. He loves to share them, and I appreciate it. So I'm going to sign off. You've been watching another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. Thank you for all my audio listeners, too. There's still people that tune in that way. And everybody shoot straight. You got to shoot safe, and you got to read your Bible every day.
Definitely.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
I appreciate that. Have a good one. Many thanks to Dave, and if you're subscribed to my YouTube channel, you can go over there right now. You can watch the video so you can see all the gear that we were talking about and reviewing. Again, before I sign off, I just want to remind you, I do not play commercials on this show anymore. So this is listener supported. Please go to Patreon, my link, patreon.com/handgunworld. For as little as $3 a month, you can support my show. I would very much appreciate that. And don't forget to sign up for email updates. And you can get a free copy of my article that I wrote, Because I Can't Carry a Cop. With that said, thanks for tuning in. Remember, as I just mentioned before, shoot straight, shoot safe. Read that Bible every day. That's important. And I'll talk to you again next time. Goodbye. If they're back.